Success stories and interviews with game changers and thought leaders who have overcome both in life and in business. Welcome to Vertical Momentum.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Vertical Momentum. Guys, this is going to be a fun episode. If you're a podcaster, you definitely need to listen to this. The gentleman I have on had me on his podcast, and we had such a good time. I had to have him on. My friend Jared is doing an amazing thing in the podcast world. He's also a brother in Christ, which I'm very grateful. He's a hockey lover. We got so much to talk about today. Jared, my brother, how are you today?
Richard, what's up, man?
Dude, yeah,
I'm good, man. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you a lot. And you were on my podcast in February. And yeah, it's good to be here, man. I appreciate.
Bro, I loved your last episode with Sean. Truly amazing.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Yeah. Have you met him?
I haven't, but I'd like to get in touch with him, you know, because we're all on the same wavelength, you know?
Yeah. He's a great dude. Yeah. He like just won like a podcast award too or something.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Recently. Yeah. He's killing it, man. He's crushing it.
You know, I was on your podcast, the Louder Than Now podcast. It's really amazing.
Thanks, man.
Oh, of course, man. You know, and I'm so grateful that we're friends and thankful that you're a brother in Christ. So that's the most important thing to me anyway.
Yeah, so, for sure.
A little bit about you, you know, where were you born and what little Jared was like as a little kid? What were you like?
Oh, that's a great question, man. What was I like as a little kid?
We're gonna hop in the Wayback Machine because I always I want to get to know the man behind the microphone.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, we only see topical stuff and we don't really go deep. And now I've been called the Joe Rogan of G.I. Joes, so I guess I have to go deep.
You're killing it, man. You got two podcasts. So this is the Vertical Momentum one, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, that's an excellent question. And, you know, it's a very good question because we are formed and shaped by childhood, you know, I mean, everybody is. And I think for me as a kid, I was, I don't know, I was a lot of things, man. I think the first thing was just very curious and very happy a lot. It's kind of a double-edged sword because I was always kind of seeking to be sort of the center of attention. And I loved being on stage. I loved speaking. I loved being in front of people. I loved making people laugh. I was very involved in lots of things. I grew up playing ice hockey, which was a real huge blessing to be able to play it competitively just because, you know, this is Colorado, so hockey is fairly big there. And
so who were your teams growing up?
Well, I was definitely an Avalanche fan for sure. I lived in Minnesota before Colorado, so it was probably a little bit of a, like, you know, Minnesota sports teams. First baseball game I ever went to was the Twins. But yeah, Colorado Avalanche was my team because that was – when I was playing hockey, that's when they were, you know, they won the Stanley Cup in 96, which was the first season I played. And then I liked all of the college teams too. My dad and I would go to Denver Pioneers and Colorado College.
My wife, you know, we live in New York, New Jersey area.
Yeah.
So she's a Rangers fan and I'm a Devils fan. So
there you go.
We're a house divided. You know, my guy, number 30, you know,
we won
some cups.
Nice.
Our guy, number 30, didn't win any cups. So I'm
Yeah, the Devils back in the day, man. Martin Brodeur was like one of the best goalies of all time. And it's funny now because I live in L.A., I've been to Ducks games, which is Anaheim, you know, and then there's the Kings. Everybody knows the Kings. But I haven't really been a huge fan of the California teams. I think I like the Golden Knights. That's my favorite team right now.
Yeah.
They're very new. They're like the newest team in the league. They're only 3 years old.
Yeah, so. And I love their uniforms. So.
But yeah, hockey was a blessing. You know, it's kind of a double-edged. It was like felt like there was always two sides to me. I mean, one was this curious, happy, making people laugh kid. You know, I was always doing plays at church and in school, and then like musical theater in junior high, and I was just like, man, I want to be an actor someday. That'd be so cool. And then in high school, I got into like making videos and like recording things and learning how to edit. So it was kind of more, and I was always watching movies and shows. But yeah, there was also just this other side to me that, I didn't have the best relationship with my dad. He was pretty much undiagnosed bipolar himself. So he had a lot of issues with yelling, and he drank, and I know that's a lot of people's stories, you know, where it's like, man, you have one parent that's like, my mom was great, and then my dad was kind of awful. And so that definitely did impact me, and it definitely, I did feel a lot of depression and anxiety and loneliness, I think, when all of that, all of the attention getting and all of the stimulation from people and creativity and laughter faded away. You know, it's like we're all, sometimes it's like who you really are is who you are when no one's around, right? People always say that. It's like who you are when it's just, you're just in your room, you know, you're like, what are you thinking about? So,
now when, like when I was alone, you know, when I was growing up, I think we talked about it on your show.
Yeah.
The way that I dealt with abuse and stuff like that was I became a reader. I became a voracious reader.
Yeah, that's right.
And I've read over 5,000 books now, but, so what was some of the things that, was it being outgoing? Is that what kind of kept you sane, I would say, at that point in time? Is that your go-to?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I do think TV and movies, I was not a reader. I didn't start reading until after high school. I had a really hard time focusing on anything like that. So, for sure. I think movies and shows. And then I think just I was really close with the guys I went to church with. We grew up in kind of a big church, and we all kind of went to different schools. And from the time I was like 9, 10 years old, we moved to this church in Loveland, Colorado, and all the way through high school. I mean, almost 10 years really of doing everything together. And we got in a lot of trouble together. We all went to, you know, homecoming and proms together, and, it was just church life. It was like going to camps, you know, winter and summer, going on mission trips. So yeah, I think I used my, friends as a way to sort of deal with, everything that was going on. It was kind of an escape. It was like,
so what kind of student were you in high school?
What kind of student?
Yeah.
I was okay. I don't know how I got through school, man. I was so ADD, and I got kicked out of class a lot because of just being a distraction, like being a class clown, just being funny. And I think I was a smart kid. I think I was very intuitive and intelligent, but I just like I had a hard time doing the work. So like when I had my English classes, I did like to write. Writing was always something that came natural to me, but I was a really bad reader, and I just couldn't really, I had such a hard time like reading stuff. So,
maybe you are like the complete opposites. I was a good reader, but yeah. I can't write for crap. Mm-hmm. And when I wrote my book, I didn't do any editing on purpose. And right. I was in the comments like, are you retarded? And I'm like, no, I kind of missed those days of what I goes before E and all that stuff.
Yeah, you're not alone. Lots of people who are writers are not always the best. Like, we're not always good at editing or, like, grammar. We just have more of a gift of just kind of getting it all out on paper, you know? So most people aren't their own spell check editor, Grammarly people, you know. Now there's all these tools. And then I always had heard people being like, oh, if you read a lot, you'll be a better writer, you know, because you're learning new words, you're learning vocabulary, you're watching sentence structure. So the more you read, the more you write. But that's not always true. Some people just hate writing, but they love to read.
And I interviewed a guy named Steve Sims, and you know, he's a six-figure earner and he has a best-selling book. And they told him that he needed a ghostwriter for his book. And when the book came out and it had to be edited, he's like, his wife read it and said, this does not sound like you at all. So they scrapped the whole thing and he wrote it by himself. So sometimes, you know, if you're a person like me, that, you know, like when I read a book, I want it to sound like the person that actually wrote the book. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, it just takes practice. I've been kind of working on trying to put my story out on paper. And so, yeah, it's a slow process. But yeah, I read your book, man, and that was good, man. I mean, you know, it's awesome to, you know, I think nowadays there's so many different ways to communicate. You know, there's podcasts and there's videos, and hopefully people still read, you know. So
did you go to college?
Yeah, I did. I went to like a religious, like Bible school in Kansas City, and I went right after high school, and it was pretty unique because it was a 24/7 prayer and worship place. So there was like constantly worship and prayer going on. And then they had a school, and then they had like internships. This is like, it's not hard to explain, but this is like so strange. Every time it's such a strange answer, but it's like, I chose to do the night watch, the graveyard shift, you know, like midnight to 6 a.m. So I literally stayed up all night, would sleep from like 7 a.m. to like, you know, 3 p.m., which is not good for your mental health at all. I mean, you know, it's one thing to be a person who stays up late and then kind of sleeps in. I mean, that can be a lot of people. But normally our bodies do best to sleep from, you know, 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. or whatever. You know, that's the most ideal time to sleep. So I did that, and I did it for 3 straight years, from 18 to almost 22.
But what was the goal? What was the end goal for you to go to a Christian college?
Yeah, I did have a huge passion for ministry, for preaching, for teaching the word, for youth, for just the church I had been involved in. I was just talking about earlier, my group of friends. I had a real passion for ministry even at a young age. And I think some of it just came from my parents were in ministry for a little bit when I was born. They started their own church, and my mom used to like speak at the church. And so I think it was just kind of just naturally in me. But I really felt like I loved God, and I wanted to help people grow in their relationship with God. And so that was the goal. The goal was to, you know, try to like work at a church or just do something with ministry. And that ended up becoming, I originally went out there to do an internship, and I did that for 6 months. And then I got pretty hooked by just the people and the relationships and the friendships. And then my parents had moved to California while I was there. They left Colorado. So I was kind of like, well, I don't want to go, you know, I kind of want to stay. And so the way to stay was to kind of do more education and do school.
So how did you end up out in California?
Well, what happened was I had a breakdown, a mental breakdown, after about 3 years of doing this night schedule in October 2007. I was almost 22. My birthday's in November. And I had a really bad panic attack. I think just the stress of what I was putting my body through was catching up with me. So my panic attack led to like racing thoughts, just psychosis. I couldn't sleep after like 3 or 4 days. Then it turned into a week. So after about 7 days, everybody in my family was really concerned, and people that were with me in Kansas City. And I decided to just fly home to be with my family in California. So long story short is I had an episode. I snapped out of it after like 6 months. I went back to Kansas City. I went right back to normal. I finished school. And then I had the same episode happen again a year later. And so then I went back to California like a second time. And I ended up staying for like 2 years. Then I went back to Kansas City to do more ministry stuff for a few years. Then I had another episode because I had gotten off a bunch of meds. And that ended up being like the worst time of life. And then I decided to move to California permanently in 2013. And I've been here ever since.
So how did you start? Because, you know, I'm a big mental health advocate.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm a big, you know, veterans advocate. And I think a lot of the times, including myself, so I'm not, you know, I've fallen off the track because there were certain medicines that I was taking. And I decided to get off of them, and I wasn't feeling quite right. So Tell us about how you decided to, because I love a comeback story.
Yeah.
So, you know, tell me how you started to come back, and what were some of the steps you took to start getting healthier mentally?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Well, yeah, I guess a little bit of backstory. I had this episode in 2013. It lasted 8 months. And what really was hard about it was suicidal thoughts all the time, every day, all day. I had never gone to the hospital in previous episodes. So I was in the hospital. Then I was in California and it was just me and my mom. And so I had a couple of suicide attempts. And that was really scary for everybody. And at the end of this 8 month time, which I just came up on the 8 year anniversary, it was May, the first week of May of 2013, I tried to overdose. I ended up in a coma for 3 days. And this church in Pomona, California, where I live now, prayed for me for like 4 straight hours. And I came out of the coma the day they prayed. And I didn't have any brain damage or memory loss. So that was, I believe in God. I believe that was God saving my life for sure, showing me mercy. But then, I spent 5 months in the hospital. So that was really when things started to turn around. And it took some time. The first thing was really, the medicine part was a huge component. And I do believe that that can be the case for a lot of people. Although there's lots of ways to treat bipolar and depression and anxiety. And so for me, I met a really good doctor in there and he made some adjustments. And after about 30 days, I started feeling back to myself for like the first time in like 9 months. Yeah, I really had to, I think because I had so much time in such a kind of, I mean, it wasn't like a completely stress-free environment, but it was pretty chill, you know, like all day, every day I was like reading books and journaling and like watching movies, you know, and like going outside and watching people smoke and selling my cigarettes for quarters and, you know, like talking to people on the phone, you know, there wasn't really a lot going on and, you know, eating at the same time every day and you get on this kind of rhythm. So I had a lot of time, I think, when I look back at that season to really dig deep inside of myself and there was a lot of acceptance. I think before I wasn't fully accepting my situation. And I think also is just taking responsibility, like owning my life. Like, hey, I chose to get off medication and that was a bad decision. And that's part of the reason why I just went through this really like hell on earth time. What am I going to do now? You know, like what am I going to do with my life now? And it's really in my hands. I mean, I think there's elements to mental illness that's not your fault and that's not completely in your control. But you still have to take responsibility for your life, you know, and you and I talked about that when you were on my podcast about taking responsibility. And then that's just a huge theme. So that started to really, really sink in deep. And I think I just started to connect with people again and like be myself again and like read my Bible again. And I came out of it, man. And I didn't think that was possible. Like I was so stuck for so many months thinking, and that's hopelessness, right? It's like that lie that says you won't get better. You're just going to be in this forever. I think so many people have been there and relate to that. And hopefully people who are listening who might, it's just, so much change can happen, you know? So those are some of the things that took place in that time. And then later, as months passed, after I got out of the hospital, I moved to Pomona. I became a part of a church. I did like a year-long discipleship program. And I really just, I started over with friends and relationships. I didn't really have friends. You know, I had a lot of people that were close to me in Kansas City, but I was really starting over with my life. And that was, you know, just took time. It took time to be around people, connect with people again. And I had to do a lot of work with just the practical side of things, like diet, exercise, going to see the doctor. I got a really good psychiatrist. And then I started doing therapy, too, for the first time. And that was something I think that was kind of missing in those earlier years.
And, you know, as we talked on your show, you know, I've been in therapy now for 11 years.
Yeah.
But so I think, you know, and if people don't like the word therapy, I like the word coaches. And, you know, even coaches have coaches, you know, and even like some of the greatest athletes in the world, they want to be coached. They want to be coached up. So if anybody has a negative connotation about therapists, just call them your coach. And everybody needs a coach in life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, nowadays, because Richard, aren't you a coach?
I am a coach, but I even forget about it because I don't really talk about it much. But I do coach. But you know,
I've been actually thinking about there's it recently, only because. I really want to help people, and I do speaking events with NAMI and the National Alliance of Mental Illness, and it's a little bit like coaching people, kind of. I mean, I'm really just sharing my story, like I'm sharing my story with you right now, you know, and telling people like, hey, you'll get through it, you know. But nowadays there's lots of coaching, and sometimes coaching's just not it's not like a professional, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have to like be educated to be a coach. I mean, you do go through training. I mean, you would know better than me. But yeah, I think people, we just need something, you know, we need someone with some wisdom and some life experience. I mean, therapy is a little bit more relevant if you're if you have a mental illness diagnosis and you're like taking medication, I'm not saying a coach can't help you with that, but you probably would need a little bit more professional. Anyway, so
now how did you get into podcasting?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's kind of a funny story. I had been doing speaking events from about 2015, 2016. And then I took about a two and a half year break from doing anything related to like talking about my mental health other than just going to the doctor myself, because I was traveling a lot for my job. And there was a suicide that happened, a pastor here in California. And it really, really just was really sad. I mean, it's sad anytime it happens. And I was on an airplane and I felt like God was speaking to me about, like, I was thinking about that. And then I had this long flight. It's like a 3-hour flight. And I just started writing down. I felt like God was like, you need to start talking about this stuff again. You need to start talking about your story. So I got the idea for Louder Now as the name of it. And I started out making some videos. And then about after like 6 months of thinking about it, my roommate just one night, he had a podcast himself. And he was like, hey, let's just record something. And I thought he meant like me record on his podcast or something. I didn't think he meant me do a podcast for myself. So that's how it started. We just did an episode together and he helped me kind of co-host the first like 12 episodes. And we just did it every week and, you know, released it. And then I've had a couple of different breaks just because of my own mental health. But yeah, probably since about August, September, I had a break last summer because I was going through a bunch of stuff. Yeah, it's been going strong. And I really just started it because, I feel like it does a lot of different things. I mean, one is it forces me, I think, to study and kind of read and like be aware of like this conversation and all the different things people are out there talking about. And then I'm always wanting to learn too, because there's just obviously so much I don't know still. I mean, I know a lot because of my own experience, but I like interviewing people. Everybody has a story. Everybody's different. But yet there's lots of similarities when people are sharing, right? There's lots of like, hey, I had trauma in my life and this is the way I dealt with it, or I had this, you know. I've really just been, I feel like I'm still just kind of getting started. I'm still kind of learning even after 2 years.
Now, how many episodes do you have out?
About 53.
Okay. You know, yeah. Because, yeah. You know, I've been in the game a little while. I'm still learning. That's why I talk to gentlemen like you.
Mm-hmm.
Gentleman, I just released his episode a couple minutes ago. His name is Maxwell Ivy. He's actually a blind podcaster. And now he's a four-time author, a blogger, and he's a world-renowned speaker. So I love to get people's perspectives.
Man, that's
crazy. You know, even though I have 260 episodes in, I'm still learning and trying to learn. So
is that between the two podcasts?
Between the two, yeah.
Yeah, gosh, it's so much. Yeah. Well, yeah, one of the things that I haven't really done a lot of is like shorter episodes. So I'm kind of thinking about doing a little bit more of that after May, because May has been like mental health month. So I've been releasing lots of interviews this month. And it's inspiring. It's amazing what people can accomplish and do, you know, when you look at, and it's obviously, it's not just about numbers, right? It's not like, oh, I have 500 episodes, you know, it's about trying to just quality content, you know, like good stuff, like good conversations, real, vulnerable, honest.
I don't know if you know this though, you know, the average podcast doesn't last up to 8 episodes.
Yeah. I've heard that. I feel like in these Facebook groups that we're in, people post stuff like that and you're like, well, that makes sense. Cause you get going, you feel like you have an idea and then maybe you just feel like you run out of stuff to say after like 6-7 episodes and you're just kind of like, that kind of just died, I guess.
And I think, you know what it is? I think also people don't realize that being a podcaster, it's work. You're finding guests, you're interviewing them, you're editing, you're posting to all these different groups. It's a lot of work. And I think that's why a lot of people don't last till episode 8. You know, there's over 2 million podcasts out there, and only 50% of them are active.
Yeah, wow. That's 1 million people are at it. Yeah, and I think also to the pandemic, you know, when you look at like when people started their podcasts, lots of people, I think, were forced to, especially those first few months, we're just all at home, right? We're all like binge watching Netflix or binge listening to podcasts or whatever. And I think a lot of people, it forced them to just get on it, to be like, hey, I have all this time. I'm in front of my computer. Like, why not? Let's just start recording. You know what I mean? So probably like forced a lot of people, but yeah, it does take, I mean, I think the most important thing is you just got to do it because you like it and you enjoy it. It's a passion. It's in our nature to get caught up in numbers. And obviously I think you want to see it grow. That's cool. And people are motivated by money. Obviously you can make money podcasting with advertisements and sponsors. But yeah, I've just been motivated to just try to make an impact on people and try to obviously use my influence for good, you know, and I think you're probably in the same category as me with that. So
I don't make any money off of it, and it's all done on purpose. You know, I have 20 different sponsors and none of them pay a bit of it because I'm helping promote their business. So I don't make a penny off anything I do with the podcast or my book, t-shirts, speaking. I don't make any money off of it. And this way people know it's authentic. It's coming from a place of love because I'm not making any money on it. So they don't feel like they're being taken for a ride, you know? So now that you're 53 episodes in, what are some things that you wish you would have known before you started your podcast?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think probably the most important thing is just trying to do the work to like have a plan, you know, like as good as possible of a plan of like, this is what I want this to be about and this is where I want to go. And I feel like I still kind of struggle with that a little bit because it's like mental health is such a broad subject, you know? But I think the other thing too is just kind of the like having like a promotion plan or like having a website. I have like a pod page website, which is better than nothing. But yeah, if I feel like I wish 2 years ago, I would have been like, man, I need to have kind of a little bit of a, I do a better job now of like using like Headliner and posting on Audiogram and posting it on Twitter and LinkedIn and all these different places. But at the beginning, I wasn't very good at that. You know, so.
So now, okay. You know, cause I'm a big guy. I'm a big on LinkedIn. I have almost 25,000 connections. I love it. Oh, geez. So a lot of people, you know, that I've talked to, they're like, well, how do you find guests to come on your show? So tell us your secret to finding guests to come on your show.
You know, most of it, has been because of Facebook. It has been through these Facebook groups. There's a couple of Facebook groups out there that are dedicated to just, I think it's like be a guest, find a guest or something. Mm-hmm. And then there's other groups that are more general, like, you know, asking like technical questions. So I would say 90% of the guests have been through Facebook and just putting my name out there and being like, hey, I'm looking for guests. I'm looking for people who, and anytime I see anybody post anything on like mental health or addiction, I usually jump on those comments and I'm like, oh, would you be interested in being a guest? And then, yeah, the other 10% has just come from like people I do speaking events with NAMI, National Alliance of Mental Illness. I've had a few of those people on, and that's actually a pretty big pool of people to draw from. There's over like 70 presenters.
Now, what is that again? Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, yeah. So NAMI is a nonprofit organization. It stands for National Alliance of Mental Illness. And it's all over the nation. And it's in, I think, most major cities. And they have a lot of educational resources. They have classes you can take. They have one class called Family to Family, which is basically like, you know, you're a parent and you're supporting someone who's going through a diagnosis and you're just trying to get information on like how to help them. Then they have peer support groups where you can go and sit around and talk to other people who struggle. And then they have lots of just educational resources. And then they have a couple of different programs. One's called Ending the Silence, and another one's called In Our Own Voice. And those are two programs I'm a part of where I have the opportunity to speak and share my story, kind of like I'm doing on this podcast with you, in a real structured way to parents, to family classes, to hospitals, to students, to teachers, and then I do two different programs, Ending the Silence and then In Our Own Voice. So I've met a lot of people in the last 2 years doing that, who are just like, yeah, I'll be on your podcast. So it's really, really fun, man. It's one of the fun. I mean, it's an amazing opportunity that I have to be able to talk and share and get questions from people, answer people's questions, you know, like tell my story, help people, inspire people. It brings me a lot of joy, for sure.
All right. So then I got a question from one of the viewers they want to know how, you know, a lot of times podcasters, like I'm going to have you on the podcast. I'm going to promote on like 10 different platforms. But a lot of times a lot of people want to go on the podcast, but never want to promote the episode that they were on.
Oh, right.
So then how do you go about getting the people that you've had on your show promote their own episode?
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like people have also asked that in these Facebook groups a lot. That comes up a lot. I feel like once a week, somebody asks that question. You know what? I don't really have like a super strict like plan. Honestly, I kind of just assume the best with people, and I'm like, hey, would you please promote this? You know, here's the link. Here's a graphic I made for you. Could you please share this on Instagram and LinkedIn and Facebook? And most people have shared it. I think probably the best thing is, I mean, believing in people is not a bad thing. That's an optimistic trait, I guess, that I have. But I think probably just clear communication is really the best way to handle it. Like on the front end, part of what you're asking them to do is obviously provide value for the show with their story, with their expertise, but also to grow the audience, right? So I think just trying to be clear on the front end and be like, hey, when the show is published, could you please, you know, put this on your social media? You know, that would be really, really helpful. That way people kind of, I don't know, I mean, maybe they'd say no if they knew that they needed to promote it, you know what I mean? So, that's probably what I need to do a better job of. I just haven't had too many bad experiences yet, you know? So, what do you think? What do you do?
Oh, well, like I said, I just, you know, for me, I don't know if you noticed it before. Now I just, you know, like once we've talked on my show or I've been on your show, that is when the relationship just begins. And, you know, and I'll start commenting on your posts and promoting you because now we have a bond. You know what I mean?
So yeah.
I think that's where I'm a lot of people, you know, like if we come on our show, you know, I have somebody on my show, I connect with them on Facebook, LinkedIn, Pinterest, everywhere I can and start showing interest in their life, not because I want something, because I want to build a relationship. Because, you know, I believe in, you know, relationship capital. And I believe that relationships are everything in life. So, you know, for me, like you coming on the show today is just the beginning of our relationship. You know what I'm saying? So that's,
yeah, sure.
So that's, you know, and I've learned that, you know, that's what I, like I said, I just talked to Max about that today. And we were talking about that same thing about building relationships. And, you know, like I only have a ninth grade dropout, and I think we've talked about that before. But here I am, I'm able to talk to people like yourself. You know, I'm able to talk to Max. I'm able to talk to people that are 8 and 9 figure earners. I'm able to get an MBA in business, and it's free. And I get to have these people come on my show, and I can ask them whatever I want. So I'm actually learning from every episode. You know what I'm saying? So I'm sure you're learning a lot from the episodes that you do also, right?
Oh, for sure, man. Yeah, I mean, every time, every interview, I mean, and every time I do something solo, though I haven't done as much of that recently. Yeah, every time, I mean, there's just, you know, I like to use the word humility, right? Like just keeps me humble. And I think also just feeds the empathy and the compassion of just recognizing like people's stories. And, you know, you kind of talk about, well, you call yourself the comeback coach, right? Which is awesome, but that's what it is. I mean, lots of these people have comeback stories of, hey, I endured A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and now, you know, I'm writing books and I got a podcast and I'm coaching people and, you know, that's not like everybody, not everybody goes that direction, right? Like not everybody gets the help that they need and then puts themselves in a position where they can give back. So I feel every time I talk to people, I'm learning something new and I'm.
Said you do a lot of writing. Have you written a book? Have you, what do you got?
Anything published? No, I have a blog with a lot of poetry. I have two blogs, but one I need to change the name to because it's. I started a blog for the Louder Now. Yeah, I've been working on a book. I did a book writing challenge a couple months ago, and I wasn't able to really get everything written out that I wanted to. So I am kind of just working on starting over a little bit and I wanted to write like a memoir of my story. Even though I've written some articles and some blog posts where I've definitely had my story in there, but I wanted to kind of put it kind of like what you did with your book, you know, like a, just your story, you know? Yeah. So, but I don't have anything published yet.
Okay. So now where do we find your podcast? What is the name of your podcast? And what platforms is it on?
So it is on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Google Podcasts. I think also CastBox. And yeah, those are the main ones. And it's called Louder Now. I think I've titled it Louder Now Jared Deals, so it's easier to find. DIEHL. But yeah, I can send you a link to for you to put in your show notes that's got a link to all my stuff because I have YouTube channel, yeah, blog, and then a Facebook group and then the podcast. So
I love it. Now last question that I ask everybody, and you know, I ask 1,000 people, I get 1,000 different answers. We live in a crazy world. You know, we're still in the middle of COVID. We got grandparents homeschooling kids. We got, you know, parents out there driving Uber just to put food in their kids' mouths. So if I ask the average person to do something in 7 days, they're never going to get to it. But if I ask somebody to take an actionable step in the next 24 hours, they're more likely. So if somebody is struggling with their mental health, and then you could also do the same thing with the podcast, we'll do it two ways. But if somebody is struggling with their mental health, what is something they can do in the next 24 hours to start to get some help?
So the question is, I like what you said. You said it's harder to have an actionable step in the next 7 days, but what can you do in the next 24 hours when it comes to your mental health?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a great question. The first step I think anyone should take is reaching out to someone, and to be real specific what that means, I don't just mean like text someone that you haven't texted in a while, like, hey, how's it going? I mean, that's part of it, I guess. But reach out to someone that you trust and that you can, if you feel safe talking to. I think everyone has at least one of those people in their life. And start by bringing whatever's in the dark, you know, into the light. And I don't mean like tell that person everything, but tell them what's going on. And I think you will instantly feel much better. I mean, you still can struggle after that, but you probably will struggle less knowing that someone else around you knows. And, you know, if you're a person of faith, I think you can ask for prayer for that, from that person to pray for you too. And maybe you can do that over the phone with them or meet them in person. But I think the first step is just reaching out for help. And, you know, if you're also in a situation where you might need to see a doctor because you're having symptoms and they've been lasting for a while, then, you know, I would put that on part of that too. But definitely reach out to a friend for sure.
Okay, so now, what would you, if somebody, you know, because sometimes, like you said, you get burnt out when you're doing podcasts, and then people quit, and I always tell people, you know, don't quit before the miracle happens. You know, so if somebody is struggling with their podcast and they want to quit, what is something they can do in the next 24 hours to start to feel revitalized again?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think maybe just some self-reflection, like sit down and journal, like do an exercise of gratitude too, like write down what you're grateful for, write down how doing the podcast has helped you and has, you know, I would say put you in a better place because of the podcast, but also then maybe reevaluate and brainstorm, like we had said earlier, like just why are you doing the podcast in the first place? Like, what's the point? What's your motivation for doing it? Because it is a lot of work and it is time consuming. And it's always kind of hard to, like, you know, you don't always get feedback from people. So it's kind of hard to know, you know, what's helping people or not, you know? So, I would say an exercise in like self-awareness where you just write down what, you know, I guess trying to just like reevaluate the vision, you know, like I think we all go through that where time just goes by and we're like, oh, why am I doing this? Like, you know, maybe you never did that in the first place. So you just kind of started it, which is fine. But yeah, I would say something like that, like just, and then maybe try to find something that inspires you. I think everybody has podcasts and speakers and people. I listen to a lot of different stuff. And then I have a stack of books that are all, you know, I've started and need to finish. So try to just find something that inspires you too. Cause I hear a really good podcast and I'm like, man, I want to be myself, but I want to be like that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. See, I find, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts on self-improvement, self-development. You know, I'm a big Ed Mylett guy. He's my man. And that's somebody that I try to emulate myself. But now I don't normally ask to everybody, but because I know you're a brother in Christ, I want to ask this question. You know, they say that if you don't feel close to God, it was you that moved. He's always the same today, yesterday, and tomorrow. So if somebody is not feeling as close to God as they used to, what is something they can do in the next 24 hours to start to get that relationship back with God again?
Yeah, man, these are great questions. I don't think I've ever been asked that on a podcast, which is awesome.
That's why I'm different, brother.
That's right. Yeah, for sure. Well, not everybody is a faith person that I'm talking to, so to be fair, but which is fine, you know. But yeah, I really appreciate that question. You know, I think there's a scripture that's like, seek the Lord while he may be found, or I think there's another verse that's like, draw near to God and he'll draw near to you. And it's interesting when you phrase it that way, because it sounds like it's kind of putting the responsibility on the person, on us, the human, instead of on God. You know, like, God's capable of doing anything, anytime, any day of the week, right? God can overwhelm us with his love and his presence, with provision, with miracles, with healing. I mean, look, I came out of a coma and no one thought I was going to wake up, right? That was a divine intervention, but it happened because people prayed, right? Like, people did something. So I would say the thing to do is to just fast a little bit, like fast distractions, maybe fast media, or just whatever's kind of cluttering your mind, because with technology, with phones, with all these things, there's so much noise. And I think if you can just try to sit with God for 10 minutes, you know, and meditate and pray over yourself to feel something from God again. Be like, God, it's been a while. I, you know, just kind of get aggressive. Like, if it's playing a sport, you know, like, get aggressive. Like, you want the ball, you want to win. Like, we can do that, I think, with God. He's not afraid of us demanding of him to be in our lives. Yep. And I think something will happen. Sometimes it's, what's hard is that we base things off of how we feel, right? Instead of faith, because faith isn't always a feeling. But I do believe God wants to encounter us in our emotions, you know, and he does. So yeah, that's what I would say. And I'm preaching to myself, because I feel like I need to do that too, where I'm like,
yep. And I believe that he'll meet you where you're at. You know what I mean?
For sure.
All right, brother. Well, thank you so much, guys. If you're listening to this, definitely check out the Louder Now podcast. It was probably one of my best podcast episodes ever. I had so much fun.
Today, oh, really?
Yeah, it was amazing. You know, I've been on hundreds of shows, and it was amazing.
Wow.
Our sponsor for today, his name is Jim Molinelli, and he has a company called Done Right Resume. So if anybody wants a resume to actually get a job, not just to – he'll actually – make it where he actually wrote my resume, and I put it on LinkedIn, and I started getting slammed with job offers. So definitely check out Done Right Resume. Brother, I want to thank you so much for coming on and hanging out. If there's anything I can ever do to help promote you and your business, please let me know. It would be my honor.
Yeah. Well, Richard, thank you so much. I really appreciate you saying that you had such a good time on my podcast. I really appreciate that because I assume everybody that's been on has enjoyed themselves, but I don't really know because maybe I should just ask people, but I really appreciate you saying that, especially saying that you've done a lot of, you're super prolific, man. I mean, more than me, you know, and I'm really inspired by you, just for real, man.
Now this may take a couple of weeks because I'm backlogged. I mean,
yeah, no worries.
I'm putting out an episode a day.
Yeah. Oh, take your time, man. Whatever works for you.
I got like 50 in the hopper.
Richard, where do you get all these people? Like, what's your strategy? Well, or is it written down or?
No, I look on LinkedIn and like if I see somebody has a book that's coming out, you know, I'll message them and I'll say, hey, you know, me and Max, we just talked about this. There's two ways I've seen people go at it. You know, I've seen one way where I can go to a guy. If I emailed you on LinkedIn, hey, bro, you know, I'm the number 8 veteran podcast in the world. How about you come on? You'd probably look at me and be like, man, what an a-hole, you know? Or I said, hey, you know, we are the number podcast in the world. And we have a reach of almost up to 1.4 million veterans. I would love to have you come on and promote your book and talk to us about your mission. Would you mind coming on?
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, wait a minute. He's not talking about himself. He wants to get my book promoted. He wants to get my story out there. So that's the way I do it. And I'm consciously looking for people. I seen one guy, his name was Rich DeVinny, and he was on a top 5 podcast in the world. And I listened to his episode and I'm like, hey, how about I reach out to that guy? So I just reached out to him and he was on my show the next week. So sometimes I just listen to other podcasts and feel like, hey, you know, that'd be a great guest. I would love to, you know, have him on my show. And then I would talk to the host and see if they would hook us up. And 99% of the time they'll do it, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, LinkedIn's probably a good strategy. I'm on LinkedIn, but I might start using that because it's obviously professional people, you know, it's like businesses, you know, so that's awesome.
All right, my brother. Well, have an amazing week and just know I love you and I appreciate you, brother.
I love you too, man. Thanks so much for having me. And whenever you publish this, just let me know. I'll promote it. And I appreciate it.
And I'm sure we'll be talking way before that.
Of course. Of course.
All right, brother. All right.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us today. Please hit subscribe and share. Please feel free to leave us a comment.